And we're back with Browns Cast, the special bye week edition. I'm your host, Taylor Jedrzak, and I'm joined again for the midweek pod by Gerbs and Matt Milner. Hey-o.
What's up?
But for this special extended edition, we are joined by some WFNY royalty this week. We got Craig Lindahl and Andrew Snitke. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. I like that we have less Browns to talk about, so we got more people on. I like it.
Well, I've been waiting to overreact to the nothing that Andrew Berry said earlier this week, so this is my chance.
Hey, you gotta take the form when you get it, right? So how has everyone kind of been this week? What's your kind of general feeling about how we've gone through four games and just kind of the vibe you've gotten?
I guess for me to start off, I just feel like it's been kind of a weird mixed bag through 4 weeks. Like, it feels like there's not a lot to, like, truly, like, a grasp on, because the offense has been in such a weird state. I know the defense we can really get a good grasp on, but I feel like the offense as a whole through 4 weeks has been in such a weird state that I don't even know where they're at right now, because we saw one good Deshaun game, one bad one, one that was pretty much covered in rain. So we don't really know where the offense truly is.
Yeah, and then we had a DTR game, which we didn't want.
Oh, no, none of us wanted that, especially after what happened.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, it was easy, but there was the contingent that was excited to see him play on Sunday morning. I think they were excited
until it started.
Oh, wait. Gerbs, what's been your feelings?
I'm fine. An eventful week because of the, colossal screw up of Stefanski saying his true feelings on who actually decided they were not going to play, and then Andrew Berry having to try to cover it up. It's Browns being Browns, and it's just fun seeing the inner workings of some of the things that we are so used to seeing. Do I actually believe what I just said? Who knows? It was interesting nonetheless to hear some of the things that came out of not only Brown's Twitter because of the takes that can flame out, but also just the actual organization that was there. I had a kid come up to me in the hallway this week and say, "Did you hear Deshaun Watson saw the game plan that Stefanski had, and that's why he said he couldn't go. My dad said that. He heard it on the radio. I don't know. Did you hear that?" And I was like, "Yeah, man. Possibly. Who knows? I sure don't."
That sounds like a Goldhammer take.
Right. But, like, love that it was a, 16, 17-year-old kid walking up to me. He knows that, I like the Browns. I talk about the Browns whenever, he comes into the room, but just the weirdness that the Browns organization puts its fans through and the things that the fans generally seem to love to create drama wise. It's bye weeks and weeks off are never actually weeks off because we have to deal with, stuff like this. So what about you, Craig?
So for everything that I feel like we've learned about the Browns so far, the defense is good. We know that. I feel like we don't know anything else. We have two games that essentially I feel like we couldn't learn anything because they were nullified by weird things. The Nick Chubb game, are you really going to draw too many conclusions when your biggest star gets knocked out and rocks the entire foundation of the team? You kind of just chalk that one up. And then Deshaun Watson, his shoulder's not good enough to play, and so we have a DTR game. Are you going to chalk that up and feel like you learned anything about the team in that game? No, not so much. So we've got this incredible defense that I think we all relatively believe in. And we've got the one good performance against Tennessee, but you'd have to be a crazy person to just say, well, that's the offense. We just need to wait for it to show back up again the next time Deshaun Watson takes the field. So we've watched 4 weeks and we just still haven't learned as much as we want to learn. And I think that's as much of the frustration with the team as anything else, is that everybody wants to know exactly what this team is now. And you just, it's not how things work. You don't get to have that. You have to wait. You have to see what they do. And obviously we're all thinking about San Francisco next, which is maybe the toughest game of the entire year on their calendar. And so I guess they're kind of lucky to have it after the bye week, but we'd feel a lot better if we felt like we understood what this offense actually was.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of football that's been played for not a whole lot of conclusions drawn, except for defense good.
And we miss Nick Chubb.
Nick Chubb also good. Andrew, what do you got?
I don't know. I think I'm like the most Zen Browns fan that there is about this season. They're 500, and I just feel like that's exactly where they deserve to be. The way they've played, like a 500 team. You know, I agree with parts of it. I think of everything you guys have said so far. For me, I look at it as really the Browns have played one normal game this year, and that's the Tennessee game, and that's the game they look the best. So if you are trying to look for the glasses half full, that's where I would go to. But I do think it's a little bit alarming that it seems like if anything goes wrong, like it just cascades and everything falls apart after that. And, you know, I understand, you know, when you lose your starting quarterback right before the game, you know, that's going to throw a wrench in things, and you're starting a rookie who's never started before against the Baltimore Ravens, maybe the most like well-prepared franchise that there is. You know, if anybody's going to destroy a rookie quarterback, it's going to be Baltimore. And you know, but, and then, you know, you lose Nick Chubb in a game, the heart and soul of your team. Of course, that, I mean, we felt it as fans, there was a cloud over us the rest of that game. And it's hard to imagine the emotional impact when you're a player. That stuff is hard to overcome. So you can excuse any of it if you want to. But really, like, I think the biggest thing I feel is through four games, yes, you start to have an idea of what your team is, but really, like, we still don't really know what this Browns team is. And I don't even know, like, I don't even know in the San Francisco game if we're going to really learn that much. And that if we go out and we beat San Francisco, yeah, that's going to feel great. But I don't know if we should really read too much into any one game yet until they really string together two, three, four games in a row where they kind of look the same and you kind of get a feel for, okay, this is what they're trying to do. I mean, these game plans have been all over the place. We have no idea what Kevin Stefanski's ideal offense right now is with this personnel. And so all of these things are just going to take time, and we just have to let this stuff play out and see before we make any like big conclusions as to what this Browns team is. I know a lot of people like to use the bye week as like, you know, that week to kind of sit back and like really reflect and figure out what you are. But when your bye week comes in the fifth week of the season, it's just really too early to kind of take stock in anything. I think for the Browns, they're just looking at this as a reset for some of the issues that they've had in these first four games. And they're going to just say, okay, get that behind us. And hopefully, you know, we can just have a quarterback start the rest of these games and figure it out as we go.
Yeah. I get the feeling that there's been a lot of people, especially on the infernal soapbox that is Twitter, that are taking a long equation that is a football season and trying to solve for X when you're missing like five variables within the problem. And they're just filling the variables in with their own narrative and trying to get to a conclusion. And because we've only played 4 weeks, I think we've kind of hit a wall where people are drawing their own conclusions and just screaming from the rooftops that, oh, they're fine. Oh, they suck really bad. Oh, Stefanski should have been fired 3 weeks ago. Like, it's a weird time to have a bye when you haven't had a consistent play. What were your expectations to this point in the season, and has the team kind of met them? Kind of a quick answer here.
In a way, I think they're a little below expectations. I felt like 2-2 was the floor, but with the way things have played out, it's been a very weird 2-2 for me.
I do kind of like how the team is performing. To Andrew's point, week 3 was the most normal game, and it was the best that they've looked, and it was a, masterful performance over a team that, everybody thought was going to maybe be a problem in the AFC South. So I'm happy, like Matt said, 2-2 was kind of the baseline hope going into the bye week. But I'm happy with some of the performance, but obviously we could have seen a team that was 3-1, 4-0, had all the things broken right. But that's not how that goes.
Yeah, I kind of thought the Browns should have been 3-1. I can excuse the two wacky games, but as the season moves along, you can't have any more games that you have to excuse before you've eliminated yourself from playoff contention. So it just reduces the margin for error. So I think they should be at least 3-1. I understand why they're 2-2, and they're going to run out of time and excuses if they don't. Kind of get themselves on a run here.
Yeah, I had them at 2-2 in my predictions, but I had them losing to the Bengals and beating the Steelers. Then I had the other two results the same. I didn't think they would look the way they looked, but those games. But that was kind of how I had it. So record wise, yeah, they're pretty much where I expected them to be. I still in my heart of hearts believe if Nick Chubb doesn't get hurt, they win that Pittsburgh game. I mean, Chubb was killing them before that injury. And I just, with the way they couldn't move the ball, I just have no doubt in my mind they win that game. And so I think at worst they'd be 3-1. And I even think the Baltimore game would look different. I don't know if they would have won that game without Watson, but I certainly think it would have looked different if Chubb was there. So, it's the nature of being a 500 team. Like if you want to look for the bright sides, you can be like, well, this is what happened in the two wins, and we should have a couple more wins. But if you're kind of on the other side, you'd say, well, they have two losses, and man, who knows if Joe Burrow was healthy and the weather was different, maybe they'd be 1-3. So I mean, you can kind of view it however you want.
With the butterfly effect, if Nick Chubb doesn't get hurt, maybe Deshaun Watson's shoulder never gets hurt, and he plays game 4.
True. So they should be 4-0. Good point.
4-0.
If Jed Wills makes a block, then
that's the butterfly.
Then Jack Conklin is not injured.
Right. These are the actual sliding doors you want to talk about.
If Joe Thomas doesn't make the Browns draft, Jed Wills. Oh, wait.
Wait, we can't blame Joe Thomas.
That's always it. Joe Thomas is infallible, sir. I don't know what you.
Yeah, let's not throw Joe Thomas on this.
The man's been retired. Tell
you guys, I heard it driving back from that Browns game. A caller called in and said this was all Joe Thomas's fault. So
that's why I never listened to the post game show. That's why I never listened to it.
No, we are our own post game show.
We are the one who post game. I don't know.
I mean, I can throw out some caller hot takes if we want, if we need that role here.
Everybody thought my Kevin Stefanski, Eric Mangini thoughts were hot takes. So,
well, that's why we invited you on. That was actually a fairly spirited discussion in the writer side, writer, editor, owner, general staff side of the Discord this week. I kind of lobbed a grenade in there and left.
As you do, unfortunately.
And then Craig and Andrew went on about an hour's worth of discussing the merits of Kevin Stefanski. What
do you want me to recap the take?
You can go ahead and recap the take, and we'll go from there.
All right. So those who know me and know my discourse on waiting for next year over the years know that I am Mr. Stability. I'm frustrated with the number of coaches that have been rolled through and fired systematically over and over. Probably the worst examples for me is Rob Chudzinski after just one season. Nobody can be the best version of themselves unless you give them a long period of time to become that with a feeling that their job is not always on the line. And so I enjoy the fact that Kevin Stefanski has had some time. He's gone through some different quarterbacks. He's gone through some different rosters. And I think that that's a smart move. However, I do think that there are some things that Kevin Stefanski is not particularly good at. And I think we're starting to see some patterns and places, room for improvement and potential opportunities to get better. And I used an example, and I'm gonna give the precursor here so that Andrew doesn't jump all over me. Eric Mangini is not a good NFL head coach. Like, in total, he is not good. He when he's in control of the personnel, it's horrible. His ego is the size of the sun. He rubs players the wrong way. He's not a great leader of men. However, he is a football savant. He is an undeniably smart football guy. And so when he would take his rosters and he would go against the Patriots, or he would go against the New Orleans Saints when the New Orleans Saints were the New Orleans Saints, he would craft fake punts and all these different ideas. He would run Josh Cribbs out of the Wildcat. He would do whatever it took to win a game with whatever deck of cards he had in his hand on any given day.
Those rosters were kind of crap. Let's be honest in retrospect here.
And I think Kevin Stefanski is a good offensive mind. I think he schemes guys open. Overall, I like his offense. I think when his team and roster are compromised, he lacks the ingenuity, the imagination to do whatever it takes to win on a given day. I think we've seen that most recently with DTR. I don't feel like he adjusted the game plan enough for that fifth round rookie quarterback to try and do whatever it took to win that game. And I think you can even look back, and this is not a defense of Baker Mayfield, but you can look back to Baker's last game where against the Pittsburgh Steelers, he takes 9 sacks with a compromised shoulder. And you can say, hey, maybe Kevin Stefanski doesn't always adjust his game plan for the deprecated roster and situation he's in. And that's all I'm saying. I'm saying Eric Mangini, for all his faults, which there were numerous, and I'm not saying he should have the job, was capable of looking at his pair of twos in his poker hand and adjusting his scheme to give his guys the best chance to win a game. I don't think Kevin Stefanski acts like the car is in perfect working condition every single time his team takes the field. And that's just not the case. It's just not the case. He needs to find ways to scramble and work with what he has on a given day to do whatever it takes to not waste opportunities to win games in the NFL.
I think if Craig would have started his thing in the Discord prefacing it as hard that Mangini is not a good coach, maybe my reaction would have been a little different. I look at it as coaches are, well, I'm going to preface mine as saying this. I always come across as probably more of a Stefanski defender than I really am, but I look at coaches a lot like players in that, you know, they all have their strengths and weaknesses. They have good games, they have bad games. And, you know, you have to sort of decide at the end of the day at large, you know, is it better to have them around than not have them around? And I agree with everything Craig just said about Mangini. I think Mangini's secret strength really was his ability to adapt in game. The Browns always adapted to the game situation under Mangini. And I think that is definitely Stefanski's number one biggest weakness. I don't think it's his game planning. I think his game planning is good. I think the issue is when a team adjusts or when that game plan doesn't work the way Stefanski thinks it was going to work, he seems to be slow to, well, maybe not even slow, but a lot of times he doesn't change. He's almost too stubborn and wants to stick to this principle that he believes in because he thinks, you know, well, this is going to work regardless. And, you know, you can have a perfect game plan to beat the opponent, but if your players can't execute that game plan, you know, what's the point of that, right? So I think that's where he runs into trouble, and you sort of see it. Like, I think his principles are fine. I think the way he wants to run an offense is mostly fine. I think he's a better offensive coach than Eric Mangini is, but he doesn't have that ability to adapt in game. So that's his weakness. But from his strength standpoint, like, I've never heard the players complain about him. You know, I think he just brings this level-headed, sort of just stable feel to the organization. And after watching years and years and years of just these absolute clown shows that we had coaching this team, like, the reason I'm like hesitant to say, well, we should definitely get rid of Stefanski is because, like, I've been through that. And with the talent on this team, I'm not sure it's worth the risk. I view Stefanski in a lot of ways, you know, I'm a big Cavs fan, obviously. I view him almost as like a Caris LeVert kind of situation where, like, you know, coming into the season, it was like, well, there's probably better players than Caris. Not probably. There are better players than Caris LeVert. But, like, are we – how confident – if we let Caris LeVert go, how confident are we that we're going to bring in somebody that's going to be better? Can we find that guy right now to fit the window that the Cavs are in? And I look at that with the Browns, like – if we get rid of Stefanski and you tell me, you know, well, hey, for some reason the Dolphins are getting rid of Mike McDaniel and we can get him, cool, sign me up. Like, let's do that. Or
I think Steelers, the city of Cleveland might start a GoFundMe for that one.
Yeah. Or, you know, the Steelers fans are mad at Mike Tomlin. If they want to get rid of him, yeah, let's get rid of Stefanski and let's get Mike Tomlin, sign me up. But if we're getting rid of Kevin Stefanski and bringing in another coordinator who's never coached before, like, that's a huge risk for this team in this window. Like, I view our window, to me, as much as I love, you know, Nick Chubb, and, you know, people will look at Deshaun Watson and say that's the window. To me, Myles Garrett is the window. Myles Garrett is the best Browns player I've ever seen in my life. He's a generational talent. He single-handedly impacts games in ways I've never seen a Browns defensive player do before. I mean, we can all rattle off games where Myles Garrett made the play when we needed that play. So to me, Myles Garrett is that window. And if at the end of this season, if this all falls apart, we have to get rid of Stefanski and even Andrew Berry, and, like, we're just all starting over with all these guys, like, that window's probably gone. And I think that's my concern. And that's why I'm more conservative in terms of, like, yeah, I don't think Kevin Stefanski is a top five NFL coach, but I think he's probably good enough that I'm fine with us keeping what they have going and letting him continue to sort of lead this organization.
How much do you think his rigidity is holding the team back at this point? And that could, anyone can answer that. It's not just for you guys.
I'll go first. I don't think it's even rigidity. I think he just probably needs more experience. I still wonder if he should be calling the plays on Sunday, but I'm with Andrew. Like, I prefer stability. I really do. Yeah. I'm not looking to run Stefanski out, even with my criticism of him. I just think it's an opportunity. And, you know, Andrew brought up Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin wasn't Mike Tomlin in year 1, 2, 3. The luxury of being with the Steelers is you get to year 10, 11, 12, like, what? Yeah. You get a chance to become the best version of yourself.
You get a chance to build the standard that we hear about all the time.
Right. I do agree with Greg that it's not necessarily rigidity. I would like if Stefanski gave up play calling. I do think he has the innate ability to scheme guys open, and his offense is, I mean, he has the bona fides to show that his offenses work in ways that, you know, that make good quarterbacks better and crappier ones good. And we've seen that, you know, throughout the league. To Andrew's Karras point, Miller and I were talking about Ramon Laureano in the Discord, and the salary arbitration numbers and projections that were coming out, and you know, to bring up yet another sport that we're not, you know, talking about on this podcast. We discussed how you know, Laureano is not a great player. He's like a 1-2 WAR player. But his salary his arbitration numbers are probably going to be in around like $5 million next year. Mm-hmm. If you're in Major League Baseball, you're paying about $8 million per WAR. And you know, again, this is a football podcast, so baseball guys can come at me if they want to.
Where's
Ethan? He's in New York. but anyway, Laureano is going to be a good value for a team out there. He shouldn't be the only thing Cleveland does. To that point, for the Browns, Stefanski is a really good coach. Is he a great coach to the point of, you know, Belichick or Tomlin or, you know, the other guys that we've, you know, that you can measure off the top of your head, Harbaugh's and all those? Maybe. We just don't know, because we need to actually let him get through these growing pains of, maybe I should give up play calling and have somebody else take over. Maybe I need to have some, you know, 20-year-old kid who plays Madden tell me what happens when my time's running down in a quarter, or, you know, somebody needs to help me with changes. I've made mention on this podcast before of how, you know, Stefanski and the Browns organization last year reminded me of Denzel Washington's character in Remember the Titans. You know, we've got six plays on offense, and that's what we're going to run, and we're just going to run these six plays because they work. Stefanski seems to have a really hard time when stuff hits the fan and all of a sudden the option play is not there. And, you know, we saw that with Chubb going out in week two. We saw that with Watson going out in week four. It's really, I am not a coach. I've never been a coach. At any level, I don't know how easy or hard it is to throw out a game plan, but I don't know how you have a game plan for Deshaun Watson when all reports were that he couldn't lift his arm over his shoulder to throw a ball on Monday or Tuesday. And you're going into a week with, yeah, he's going to play because he told me he's going to play. And this is the game plan that you have where you're having a fifth round pick rookie coming in cold. You know, what was he doing during the week prepping? If he was taking the first team snaps, which he feasibly was, why was the game plan not better schemed up for him and less for Watson? So, you know, it just seems like the fancy gets the deer in headlights look, and, you know, plans the work, works the plan, because it's worked in the past. But it's a little bit harder to do that when, you know, like I said, those curveballs start coming.
And maybe DTR choked. Maybe he threw the ball 40% worse on game day than he did all week long. We have no idea. We have zero clue.
Right. 40 throws certainly would say that.
Yeah, like that. That's where I do agree with some of your points. I feel like sometimes with Stefanski, I definitely feel like that there's that slow adjustment period that doesn't happen in game. But I do feel like with the DTR game yesterday, I just feel like with his performance, I just think it was like the performance was so bad. I couldn't even tell you if it was just a game plan issue, because like, sure, he looked sure it looked bad because the plays looked bad, but I mean, at the same time, he's a fifth round rookie, and when you're and from all reports, and I'm getting the impression that they felt that he could start up until 11:30, that to me, I just feel like once that got thrown out, it's just like I don't know how much you can truly adjust on the fly, especially when it's like 2 hours notice. But I definitely agree to the point that at times he's slow to adjust to things when things kind of like hit the fan pretty much. But I think the Sunday game is just basically like, I can't really take away from it because it's a rookie and like he tried his best in my mind.
I think looking at that, looking at that Baltimore game, I do think that Baltimore game is probably the singular most damning game against Stefanski that he's had. And that's because I very strongly agree with what Gerb said, that as much as you want to say, well, Watson, he didn't know until right at the last minute that Watson wasn't going to go. Watson didn't practice that week. So I'm assuming the Browns practiced. So DTR was in there taking those snaps. Were they just having him emulate Watson's game plan, or were they, you know, and then, you know, to Craig's point, but we don't know what he looked like in those practice. Maybe he was running those plays and executing them perfectly in practice, and Stefanski just thought he could handle it.
And then he saw Patrick Queen and pooped his pants a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, the first game jitters got to him.
And that could very well be, because I'm telling you, like, he made his, you know, he made his first couple throws, and then, you know, Baltimore was really giving him the middle of the field. They were just daring him to throw into that middle of the field. And then, you know, the first one that should have been intercepted was a bad throw. I mean, the guy was open, and it was just a bad throw. I think the one that did get intercepted, I'm trying to remember now, which
was also was a bad throw.
He tried to force like a crossing throw to a crossing route, and it bounced off a defender.
Yeah,
and tipped and into the arms of a defender.
And I think from that point, that was where it was just like his confidence was gone. And that's where you need to be able to adapt and say, okay, let's give him something that he can do. You know, let's try running the ball a little bit more. You know, that was a game where, you know, they were like, you know, they had that holding call on that first run play, and it was a good running play. And I still think it was a pretty weak hold. I think it was Amari that got called for holding.
Yeah.
And it was. I thought that was a pretty weak holding call, but it almost seemed like that scared them away from going back to the run. I would have liked to see him do something just to let DTR get a little bit of confidence again. But instead it was like, all right, just go out, forget about it, and just keep executing the same game plan. And he just showed he couldn't do it. And not in that game anyway. He wasn't ready for it, or if he wasn't capable, but he didn't get the job done. And that's why I think it was a bad game for Stefanski, because maybe he didn't know if he was going to have Watson or not, but he had to know there was a very real chance he wasn't going to have Watson. You have to have a game plan for DTR as some kind of a contingency.
DTR is a decent runner too. I like maybe have more of that stuff in the playbook, but what is there any merit, you think, to the argument that's kind of come out in hindsight to, well, why didn't we just play PJ Walker? He's at least started games in the league.
Well, this is the other place where I felt like I kind of got in your business a little bit on Discord, because you said something a little bit snide, just a little bit snide, Taylor, about how nobody was complaining when they traded Josh Dobbs, so now you don't get to complain now. And it's like, okay, Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are the professional football guys. I'm a schlub with a website, podcast, and an iPhone. And like, it's not up to me to know whether they should have kept Josh Dobbs or not. It's up to them to know that if they start their rookie fifth rounder in week four, that they're horribly, horribly putting their team behind the eight ball, and that they should have kept a more veteran backup, one who's gone on to start games for Arizona, one who they valued enough to have with this team twice over the course, I think two separate times over the course of two seasons. And so I do think the criticism of Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski is fair on the Josh Dobbs trade. I don't care about a fifth round draft pick. If the Browns could have had a more serviceable starter who won that game against Baltimore, it would have been better. Wins are better than losses. I don't know if I don't know if there's any argument there. And so I do think there's been like maybe a little too much kind of pushing that argument off, like that it doesn't have validity because nobody complained at the time when it happened. And you're not the only one who said it. Ken Carman said it. Some other people on the radio said it. And I reject that altogether, because that, like, whether Andrew Gerbs or myself says something when a trade happens, like, we weren't even at training camp this year. We're just guys who like read words online and watch videos poorly shot by beat reporters.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that argument. I think generally, I think when I make those snide remarks on Discord, it's it's my safe space for commenting on
until I get there.
The South Park, that's my comment on the people like in South Park when they go rabble, 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 because that's kind of what Brown's Twitter turns into. Like,
that's true.
It's like a long series of whataboutisms, and it's just frustrates me. But like I see why you'd want to keep Josh Dobbs around. I do think that they saw enough out of DTR in training camp, and I think we all saw a decent amount of DTR in training camp and preseason that we were like, yeah, well, why don't we just keep him and make him the backup because he's played so well.
The same thing the Steelers saw in Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, exactly. I think I said that during the game last week. I was like, oh shit, we got picketed.
And somehow they still beat us.
Was it because of Kenny Pickett?
No,
probably not.
I do think too. One last thing I want to say regarding Stefanski, and this is a bit of a cop out. I can even admit it, but you know, because I'm not sure any NFL coach, other than maybe Zach Taylor, gets to have normal seasons. I think, you know, every team goes through adversity, and you know, where something goes wrong, throws a bomb in your plans, and you kind of have to, you know, get through that. But Stefanski has really had a bunch of very abnormal seasons. You know, his first year is COVID and he's dealing with that. The second year, Baker hurts his shoulder in week two. And we just go through that whole struggle, that whole season of dealing with Baker's shoulder and Baker being totally inefficient.
Baker losing himself.
And I do think that that's maybe perhaps one of the things, like when you talk about the learning process that Stefanski's going through this year, when it's like, okay, you know, we could try to convince Deshaun to play with that shoulder, but I've seen this happen before and I don't want to go through that again. Then last year obviously is the most abnormal season you could possibly have. And now this year you lose Nick Chubb in week two, and then Watson, you're dealing with the Watson injury. So, you know, again, I'm not using these as excuses. I'm not saying this is anything special to the Browns. Like, every team goes through this, but like, I do think the degree of abnormality that Stefanski has had to weather has been like quite a bit. And I think he's mostly handled a lot of these things really well. I think he really shined in that COVID season. Like, just dealing with everything the teams really seemed together that season. And I think that, you know, he handled that better than a lot of NFL coaches did, you know, including guys with a lot of experience. But, you know, so it's not to say, well, you know, we'll just keep waiting for that perfect season. Because, again, unless you're Zach Taylor, that doesn't happen. I just think that it's, you know, I don't know. I sit here and I look at, like, on Bill Simmons' podcast this week. They were complaining about Bill Belichick and, you know, Simmons saying that he's not a good coach anymore. And, you know, you hear the Steelers fans starting to question, you know, Mike Tomlin and, all these really good coaches, their fans are always unhappy with them. And it kind of goes with the territory, and it seems louder sometimes because we're Browns fans. And so we hear all the Browns talk. But to some degree, I do think like a lot of this is just normal. This is NFL. Like, the margin of difference between a good and a bad NFL team is so razor thin. And the margin of difference between a good and a bad NFL coach is so razor thin. And it's easy to react when it's bad, and it's easy to react when it's good. You know, you'd sit there and watch a Tennessee game and say, man, you know, Stefanski coached a great game. He outcoached Mike Vrabel, you know, one of the more well-respected coaches. And then you turn around and you have that Baltimore game. So I think if I had advice for it, like the general fans out there, it'd be just to try to level that out a little bit and like, just let the season play out. Let's see what, like, we don't need to worry about firing Kevin Stefanski now. They're not going to fire him now. They're not going to fire him midseason. Like, you just got to let this play out, see where it's at, and then we can reassess and go from there.
And to your point, you just mentioned the Patriots. We've been talking about the Ravens and the Steelers. Bill Belichick's in his 23rd year. I'm looking this up right now. Mike Tomlin is his 16th season at age 51. John Harbaugh is 61, but this is his 15th year. Okay.
And Ron Harbaugh is 61.
He's 61.
He looks good for 61. Wow.
Yeah, he looks good for 61. Wow.
But I guess my point stands. You know, and maybe there is an argument to be had with Bill Belichick because he's 71 years old now. You know, at some point, you know, nobody gets the Disney ending at the end of the road. Pretty much, hardly anybody gets the Disney ending. And so it's reasonable to question. But these organizations that have been the most consistent over the last 20 years have also maintained their coaches essentially for the last 20 years.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to maintain your coach when you're on the positive side of 500 every year. I would say, and I'm not anti Stefanski at this point either. I just happened to lob a grenade into the chat.
yeah, every day it seems like.
Apparently, it's my specialty.
I mean, when you're as easily triggered as I am.
but like, I do wonder. The hot seat in the fan base almost doesn't matter because this fan base has become so mercurial. Like, I don't know what has driven the fan base to this point. Like, I feel like it was for 20 years when we sucked. Yeah, it was, well, they suck. So why should we put that much effort into it? But like in the last 4 years that they've been good, it's been up and down roller coaster from the peak of heaven to the pits of hell every week, every time they win or lose. So I feel like we need to as a fan base need to figure out a way to level that out. And I think Craig just said that as well, but
here's the hot take though. I actually think Browns fans are more patient than they have been in a long time right now.
I have
a theory. Because Andrew Berry said we want him to be. Andrew
has a theory.
I have a theory on this too. I think because the Browns were so bad for so long and we sat there and we watched these other teams and it looked easy against us, I think we Browns fans developed this idea that good teams don't struggle, that it's easy for good, almost like a college situation. You know, I think a lot of times it seems like Browns fans want the Browns to be like Ohio State. And, you know, the NFL is not college football. The good teams struggle. You might have one or two teams every year that are just clearly better than everybody else. And yeah, maybe for them, it is a little bit easy. The Browns aren't on that level. They are not on the level of the Kansas City Chiefs, the San Francisco 49ers. Like, they're not on that level right now. And there's not one thing that you can change that will put them on that level. But so the Browns are going through that struggle that all these good teams go through. You know, the Cowboys looked like one of the best teams, and then they lay an egg against the Cardinals, you know. I'm sure there's a ton more games already this year. So I just think, you know, this idea that it should just be easy and that we should be able to just take care of business week in and week out, it doesn't usually work that way for the good teams. They struggle. They go through these waves. And, you know, maybe their fans are just as volatile as Browns fans are, and I'm just not – I don't follow a bunch of, you know, I don't know, Cowboys fans on Twitter. You know, I don't know how Cowboys fans react when they go through adversity, but it to Taylor's point, like, it does just seem like they've just ride these waves of emotion so hard. And I just don't think it's worth it. Like, I just think you gotta sometimes just take a step back and just realize, like, yeah, that was a bad game. That sucked. Let's see what they come with next week.
Yeah. And I can agree to your point, Andrew, because like, My reaction after leaving the Browns game was, that sucked. I guess we'll just go into the bye, try to get healthy, and go from there. And then I just see all these different takes where this loss felt like the biggest detriment to the season, and they'll never come back from it, and making all these hot takes. And then I think I saw Jay Crawford made a thing about, like, Stefanski being like distraught that Deshaun wouldn't play, and it turned into shoulder gate, as I called it. And I'm like, God, 2-2 should not be this stressful.
Why can't we be normal?
Yeah, also, Cowboys fans don't know how to handle this because they usually have the Yankees to root for in the playoffs. So they're just completely oblivious right now.
Alabama fantastic. Already has two losses.
Right. That's right. Yeah. This is just
the Warriors,
tough Lakers year Cowboys
for Cowboys. The Warriors and Lakers don't start playing for a couple of weeks. I do wonder what do you guys think is the general level of hotness on Stefanski's seat over the course of this year internally? The fan base doesn't matter because that's going to change every week. But internally, where do you think how much pressure do you think is on him to? I don't even want to say make the playoffs, because saying the Browns should expect to make the playoffs is hard after 25 years of watching some shit.
I think from, at least in Berea, I think it's still like moderate, because I mean, 2-2 is, it's not panic mode. It shouldn't be panic mode inside there. Obviously they got to have to sort out some things through this bye week from like figuring out the offense and stuff. But like, I would not think it's as hot as the fans try to make it out to be sometimes. Like that's just my general vibe on it.
I think it's 2 or 3. If you're going on a 1 to 10 scale, I think honestly, it sounds weird, but when Nick Chubb went down, I think that saved a lot of the angst from the team internally, because you lost such a big piece of the team that you couldn't properly grade what was coming out of it. You know, the same way we look at the Steelers game of like, well, of course they lost it. They lost Nick Chubb and everybody had to stare at it, you know, and see it go so poorly. The organization can't say like, well, you have this and this and this and this, go and do it now. It's like, well, you have this been taken away from you. You have a Watson missing in week 4. You know, you had a bad weather game in week 1. I think it saved him a little bit more internally. But yeah, I don't think that it was ever too hot, you know, in the organization. I think, like I said, 2 or 3, nothing too major.
I'm with Gerbs. I hope it's a 2 or 3 because, you know, amputating the coach has never worked for us so far. And this is the most adult kind of stable coach that the Browns have had since 99. And it's the one that they seem they're in the position to give the most opportunity. He works closely and well with his general manager. I know they're not perfect and the roster is not perfect, but they seem to have a great working relationship. There's not a power struggle. Everybody seems to know their role and be aiming in the same direction, even if they haven't gotten there yet. So not only do I think it's probably a 2 or a 3, I hope it's like a 2 or a 3.
I can't believe that I'm going to make this point and not Craig, but from Andrew Berry's perspective, I think it's a 2. The wild card is Jimmy Haslam. You know, I think Haslam does seem to be different. And, you know, ever since the rebate scandal or whatever, and D has kind of like stepped up her influence on the team, I do think things have seemed calmer from the owner's box. But, you know, Jimmy is still a wild card, and I don't think we can put it past him that it could be creeping up a little bit higher than it is for everybody else. But I think for Andrew Berry, it's a 2, if even that. This is the most aligned we've seen the team structurally. I mean, from the front office down through the coaches, through the position coaches, they are all in alignment. They all view the game the same way. And I think that adds a lot of, you know, maybe gives you a little bit of a longer leash, if you will. And so I think from their perspective, it's probably very low. I think they all want to keep this thing going and just, you know, keep working through all these. The issue is just, you know, it will Jimmy let them? And I think that's that's what we have to see. And I'm curious too, and that does beg the question though, is it just Stefanski? Like, would Jimmy let Barry just remove Stefanski and bring in somebody else? Or does this become a complete clean house? Does Andrew Barry also have to go? Does Paul DePodesta have to go? And you know, that's probably, I just probably opened a whole other can of worms, but we're running long here.
We don't need to go down that route today. I think,
but it's out, but it is out there.
You said DePodesta.
We have squeezed.
You can't do it. No, get out. Pull the cord.
You know why you still can't?
Let's go to the pick. Let's get out of here.
Quickly, one more. What is just quick sentence? What's kind of your outlook going forward the rest of the season? Is it still positive?
I think it's still fairly positive. I mean, with this defense and the teams that we're facing on the upcoming schedule, if they can figure out a way in the aggregate to figure out their run game and then the passing game slowly develops, I think with this defense, you can win a lot of games based solely on the defensive effort and the offense giving you enough. So I feel like they can still patchwork the offense together without Chubb, and the defense can be kind of the identity of this team and be able to like get you close to 10 or 11 wins.
I think the season goes as Watson goes, as hard as that is to take for some people. I think he can be good. I think he has we saw it in week three that Stefanski and Watson were seemingly on the same page that way. And I think they can make it work. And I think that I still think they can make a playoff. I think they can make a wild card. The division is kind of sunk already by this point, unfortunately, because Baltimore has, if they win against Pittsburgh, they will have 3 wins in the division and all on the road. So the division looking rough at that point, but yeah, I still think playoffs are a possibility, maybe not likely, but a definite possibility.
I've already talked too much in this podcast, so I'm just going to say I agree with everything Gerbs just said.
Woo!
Yeah, I don't predict anything. I don't make predictions, but I do feel like this team has the roster to make the playoffs, and if they don't make the playoffs, it's going to be disappointing, and we're just going to have to see how it looks to try and make any conclusions about what their future is going forward. But they absolutely have the talent and should compete for the playoffs this year still.
Yeah, I look at the schedule coming up and I'm like, if you can't find a way to win 8 games against the teams that you're playing, then maybe changes should be made, because you play, other than having to go to Baltimore and playing Cincinnati late in the season, which we don't know where they'll be. I don't think they'll know where they'll be. There's a whole lot of crap on that schedule. So
it depends on what it looks like, and it depends on if changes can make you better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll find out. We got, what, 13 weeks to go?
Woo!
Woo! Hopefully it gets better.
It'll be a long...
But I will transition us into some game picks for this week. We will not be picking any Browns prop bets, but I have come up with some other ones that should be fun. But first we will do some game picks. We got Houston going to Atlanta. Atlanta is a 1-point favorite.
I'm feeling good about the Texans in this one for some reason, so I'm going to go with Texans.
I mean, it's not some reason. Texans have played well. I'm Texans here too. This is one of the only road picks I took on the slate that you picked here for us. But yeah, Texans are really good. Are playing really good at least right now. And Stroud, I said Stroud was the best pro ready quarterback in the lot, and he's proven me right so far.
I wanted him in Charlotte. I'm going to stand by that, but. Scott Fitterer sucks. I'm going to go with the Texans as well. Desmond Ridder just doesn't do it for me. And I don't think he does it for anyone at Atlanta either, to be completely honest.
Yeah, next game.
We got the Titans and the Colts in Indianapolis. The Colts are a 1.5 point favorite at home.
No, they're a 2.5 point dog.
Did that change?
They're a 2.5 point dog on DraftKings right now.
Okay, well, I will change that.
I'll still take the Colts.
Yeah, I'm Colts as well. I like the addition of Jonathan Taylor this week, seeing what he looks like for them. I don't think he'll be there for long, but I do like the addition of him to their backfield. So.
Yeah, I think I'll probably go Colts on that one.
I don't know. I think the Titans they played well last week. I don't know how much of that was being very angry that the Browns ran them out of a stadium, or if the Bengals are truly that bad. But I think the Titans have a good enough team to be able to still beat a Colts team that people thought would be tanking anyway. Another weird game to pick at the Saints going to New England. Do you trust Mac Jones?
No, but I
before we were talking, no, but I'll take Belichick. Before we recorded, I was joking. No, so I might go Saints with this one.
What's the spread on this one?
I put it here as New England -1.5.
Jeez.
Oh, God.
I would take the Saints.
Here's the thing. What's Derek Carr's shoulder like right now? He played last week.
That's also another weird nugget.
He played last week, but, I mean, I don't think he threw further than 10 yards down the field. Alvin Kamara caught 13 balls for 33 yards last week. Like,
we need some Jameis Winston action.
That is an incredible stat.
Good for fantasy, not for the actual football.
You can't win like that. So yeah, I'm going New England just because I don't know where his arm is, and I, as much as I don't want to put any, you know, hope on Mac Jones, I'm going there. And DraftKings right now has Patriots -1, so I don't know where the pick is, but 1.5, 1, that's fine. I'm still going Patriots.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Patriots as well. I just don't think they're going to lose at home to a team that is that mid.
Next game, I agree.
Next game we got, this one's weird too, but it's weird for a completely different reason. Bengals going to Arizona. Arizona is a 3-point dog at home.
I'm taking Arizona because I don't like the Bengals, period. That's it. It's Homer. It's all Homer. Reverse Homer stuff.
Hater energy.
Yep. Sign me up for that.
We like Haterade on this podcast.
I'm even sick of Golden Boy Joe Burrow. Enough. We get it. You're good. Stop it.
Give me the home dog, man. The Arizona Dobnals. I don't know what you want to call them, but I'm there.
Yeah, give me the Arizona Josh Dobbs. Give me it.
You know what I want, though? I know this isn't one of your picks. I want the over 44.5. Can I have that?
I do think the Bengals are a good example, though, of what happens when a good team finally runs into a little bit of adversity and you're starting to see things fracture there and, you know, Chase calling out, whether that was calling out Burrow or the game plan, whatever it was. So, maybe Zach Taylor is finally figuring out that things aren't always that easy.
I'm just amazed that it's taken 3 years of this whole vision quest for defenses to figure out that Zach Taylor is not a very good offensive coach.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't help that Burrow can't move.
No, like, it doesn't.
Don't let those facts get in the way of our conversation.
We were enjoying hating on the Bengals. Come on, don't.
Are because you, they should have shut him down. There's no way he should have been played at all this year this point.
What's funny is
week five. You're week back five, in training camp, looking at maybe starting Burrow now. That's where you should be looking at starting Burrow.
Remember back in training camp when Ja'Marr Chase said that they should sit him for the first 4 or 5 games. Maybe they should have sat him for the first four or five games. Oh, I'm going to take the Bengals just because if there's a week, it has to be this one.
We said that about the Titans because of their pass defense being just flat out terrible, and they got shut down by that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. But, like, back against the wall, I guess we're going to figure out what the Bengals are really made of. They really haven't had a back against the wall game in a while because they've been such the darlings. And then
also, Houdet is stupid.
It's Skyline derivative.
I hate it.
Houdet was probably first.
It was.
Be original, Cincinnati. Yeah.
Okay, then we have an actual good football game. Cowboys at the 49ers. When I made this, the 49ers were -4. I don't know if that's still the case. Probably
-3.5. Close enough.
Three and a half on DraftKings. So
yeah. So Cowboys and Niners, game of the week.
I don't like the 49ers, but I really love how they play. So I'm saying I love to hate that team. They're just so good and they're fun to watch, even though I don't like them. I'm taking the Niners.
It's funny because
I was the opposite. When I was growing up, like my NFC team was the Niners, and like when they had like Alex Smith, so I always
you had an NFC team, you poser.
I mean, I was 13 or 14. Like when your team doesn't make the playoffs.
I have to chuckle because for Matt growing up, it was Alex Smith. I grew up watching Joe Montana with the Niners, so yeah, right. It makes me feel nice and old.
I was Steve Young and Jerry Rice, who I share a birthday with. So yeah, I was always like, "This is great."
Yeah,
my first.
I always loved the 49ers. I loved the 49ers when I was a kid too. Like it was again Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott, like. Roger Craig, love those teams. Tom Rathman.
And I always like the colors. Like they just have such a great uniform.
My Browns are dead team was the Packers though, and it has been rekindled this year with Jordan Love for whatever reason. Also, maybe Rodgers leaving. I liked Rodgers when he was there. It just got really weird at the end, and now I'm big on the Jordan Love. So much so that my boss has told me he was buying me a Go Pack Go flag to fly outside my house. That's how much I've talked about that at work. So that's a thing. That's the thing that's happening in my life.
That's
what happens when you hit 38.
Feels traitorous.
But anyway, this game, I'm going with the Niners because they're just good. I don't like Brock Purdy. I joked that he's a warlock. That's literally how I Brock the Warlock. That's what I text in the group chat. And if you take him and put him in any other team, he is Mr. Irrelevant. But the Shanahan offense is so good, and they ask him to do so little with such good role players around him that you're seeing, you know, what that looks like. And their defense is that good that they're going to shut down the Cowboys.
Has there ever been any less of a Brock than Brock Purdy? Like stereotypical Brock.
Yeah, he is not an 80s villain.
Brock the Warlock, man.
I just think the 49ers, it's Shanahan's offense plus Christian McCaffrey. I mean, he's healthy, and he is just so ridiculously good. I don't know if we give MVPs to non-quarterbacks anymore, but McCaffrey's certainly going to put up an argument if he keeps playing the way he's been playing. So, yeah, I'll take the Niners.
Well, I mean, if the Niners have the best record in the league and you can't give it to Purdy.
That's a good point.
You might have to do it with Christian McCaffrey, who would probably be the first MVP since, like, Adrian Peterson.
By the way, this is also my excuse for why the Browns should trade for Jonathan Taylor.
I'm good with it. I said he was not going to be in Indianapolis long. Do it.
It's not my money. Spend it.
I can't get started on that. That's That's a half hour. That's another half hour conversation.
We are at 105.
An hour and 5 minutes in.
I saw a tweet today that they said that they should trade him and just jettison Nick Chubb. Discuss. No.
Well, there's the Taylor bomb. Typical Taylor bomb. Oh,
of course. Throws a grenade, just leaves.
All right. Milner pick. So that way you can try to – I can try to get a win here.
Niners, if you hadn't figured it out by now, Niners.
Yeah, I'm going to go the 49ers as well. I don't trust the Cowboys in big situations at this point. Maybe they can prove me wrong. Okay. And some weird this week because we don't have the Browns to fall back on. We got Burrow pass yards over under 270.5.
I want the over in the game, so I'll take the over in pass yards.
I would say under because I feel like he's been under so far this entire season.
I'll
take the under on that.
I'm going to say under.
I've not liked the way he looks.
The game. Per game.
His per game kind of sucked because he posted 82 in week one.
Yeah, if he does hit the over, congratulations. You beat the Cardinals and threw for 280.
Congratulations.
But I'm not.
His yards per game this year are 182.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. Under 200. So yeah, I'm going to go under on 270.
Yeah, I'll go under as well. They kind of just got to prove it at this point.
The best argument for the over would just be that they're just so desperate, but I just have not liked the way Burrow has looked.
Okay, I'm actually going to change this just to make it a little more challenging. Dolphins points, total points, over under against the Giants, mind you, over under 38.5.
It's more fun to pick the over.
It is more fun to pick the over.
Hammer the over. I'm going to hammer the over.
Where's the game at?
If they put up 70, why can't they put up 40?
It'll be like a 35-3 game. I just, or 35-10. I don't know. I'm going to say under
37-3.
Right.
Gerbs is saying under due to lack of interest.
Where is the game? Is it in Miami?
I think it's in New York. Let me see. No, it's in Miami.
I'll take the over.
Yeah.
Over.
If it was in New York, I would have taken the under. I think a lot of the Midwest is supposed to have some spotty weather this weekend. But in Miami, I'll take the over.
Okay.
Yeah, and with how the Giants' offenses looked, I expect the Miami to get the ball a ton. So give me the
game over under is 47.5.
How much of that is the Dolphins?
There's a 36% chance of afternoon thunderstorms in Miami on Sunday.
Yeah, but that Miami thunderstorms don't count.
Very true.
Okay, we got Lamar Jackson in his first game against the Steelers in I think like 2 years or something, some weird thing. Over under total yards 274.5.
Under.
Under.
I'm gonna go over. I think they're gonna throw. I do not like the Pittsburgh secondary. It's Minka and nothing else, and Minka can go to hell. So
I agree with Gerbs. I totally. That's pretty much exactly what I was gonna say. I'll take the over.
Do we gonna tell him to go to hell too? Because that's
yes.
That's the theme on this podcast.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to tell you that for a long time.
I hope he steps on Legos for the rest of his life at this point.
Listen, here's my amount of copium for the week. The week after the Chubb game, I DM for D&D. I made a villain named Finca Mitzpatrick, and I told him, like, you guys can just kill him. Just kill him. I don't care. And that was how I got through. That's how I coped with my life that day. So
perfect.
It was a Monday night game. The Tuesday night was the D&D, and that's what we did. And yeah, it worked out for me. I felt better after that. So
okay, we got CMC total yards over under 176.5.
Ooh,
that's so many yards.
It is a lot.
But I believe he can go over just because.
That's the Cowboys defense. Yeah, I'll take the over. Like I said, the over's more fun.
Yeah, I'm leaning over. McCaffrey just looks totally unstoppable right now.
I miss him. I miss him here. It's fun times.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting you're in Charlotte. I know we say this every week.
It's like, it's crazy to think he was really good with the Panthers and he's hit like another level with the Niners somehow. Like he was still elite with Carolina and now he's just like, at this moment, he's definitely the best running back.
With the Panthers, he was an ICBM. In Shanahan's offense, he's a tactical nuke. So, like,
yeah, I'm over on the all-purpose yards. And it'll be like 100 in receiving and 80 on the ground, and that'll be enough.
Matt, what did you have?
Over.
I'm going to take the under. I think the Cowboys are going to try and force Brock Purdy to do anything else.
Like screen pass to CMC?
we're going to make you use your other lethal weapon in Deebo Samuel. We'll let him beat us. Oh, wait, he can
take
beat
that. Yeah. Take that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll try to make you use Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait.
CJ Stroud pass yards over under 270 and a half. They are against Atlanta.
In the dome.
I'm riding the overs. I'm sticking with the over on this one. CJ looks so good.
He does.
I'm over this one.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, over. Over.
Joe, did you say over as well?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to do over. Well, partially because I don't think they have very much of a run game. So I think it's CJ Stroud or bust. Sticking with the same game, and this one was Gerb's idea. Falcons total wide receiver receptions over under 5.5.
I love this.
And I brought this up, and I will say this. On the year, only 3 wide receivers on the Falcons have caught passes. And of those 3 wide receivers, there have been only 21 wide receiver receptions on the year. 3 of those were from Kadarius Hodge. So, It's great.
You hear that stat, and you would think like, oh, well, they must just be throwing to Kyle Pitts all the time. But I don't think Kyle Pitts has that many receptions either, does he?
So many fantasy owners have been complaining about this for like 2 years now. Yeah. He has not touched the ball at all.
Kyle Pitts might as well be just on the IR at this point.
It's like, what are the Falcons doing?
He's just a figment of our imagination.
Kyle Pitts has 21 targets and 11 receptions at this point in the season.
Jeez.
Jonnu Smith has 15 receptions.
Bijan is the reception leader with 19. So yeah, 2 less than the wide receivers on the roster.
I mean, I get it. He's a dynamic weapon, but Jesus Christ! Like, you can't throw to a wide receiver.
It was like a couple of years ago when Baker Mayfield had all those touchdowns to tight ends. And no more than 3 or 2 to any wide receiver. He just couldn't find a wide receiver in the end zone.
Yeah.
I looked it up. All right, there it is. Jarvis Landry had 2. Nick Chubb had 1. Demetric Felton had 2. Harrison Bryant, Donovan Peoples-Jones had 3. Wide receivers couldn't catch the ball in the end zone.
Yeah,
I'm going to say over, though, for 5.5. It's more fun to city over, and I think, you know, maybe they get it. Who knows?
It's a low number.
It is a low number.
It's such a low number.
I'd take the over, too.
I'm going to take the under. Just because, for me, that's the more fun one this time. The under is more fun on this one.
Yeah, like, I got to go under because the track record is just screaming to go under.
When it hits the over, that just puts me further in the lead ahead of you, too.
You've been tied with one of us at least every week this year.
Get him, Gerb.
He's still there.
We always right at the top, 1 or 2.
Watch this week. We're gonna bullshit our way into a 3-way tie.
Possible.
Very possible at this point.
I think a couple of underdogs, so I get those extra points. So
yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's about all we got. Craig, Andrew, thanks for coming on and kind of rehashing that discussion. That was definitely more than more than I would have been able to provide. But thanks for getting your mics back out and helping out in the Browns.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been a while since I podcasted. It was fun.
Yeah, good times. Good to see everybody.
Okay, Gerbs, Matt, I guess we'll reconvene sometime next week to break down the 49ers.
Yeah, we don't have a post game on Sunday. So what are you guys gonna do on Sunday? Are you guys gonna get a mow?
I don't know.
I have an association for that, so they do it for me.
I think you guys should do I think you should fanfic a Browns game that happened this week and then break it down.
We leave that for the Friday fumble.
Okay, that's a Dave thing now.
Yeah, I could do a Madden simulation and just break it down.
Right. We go in Madden and just simulate the season 100 times and see how it goes. Okay, well, we will be back next week. That's been another pretty good Browns cast. I keep wanting to call it Browns pod. It's definitely not Browns pod. It is Browns cast. Need to get that down. Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.